Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I just this just in, I'm learning that we're close to meeting our $30,000 World Press Freedom Day match. We're celebrating World Press Freedom Day, which is Friday, but we're celebrating it and recognizing it. And we have a little goal of our own here. We have that goal of $30,000 by tomorrow. And you can reaffirm your commitment to trustworthy journalism if you go to WPR.org/donate or 888-202-2552. Use that number, give a call, and let's go over that $700 during this show. I would like to be able to do that. And I'm really glad to be able to talk to Carrie Milliken again. And where, you know, if you're planning a trip to England or Scotland or Wales or Northern Ireland, you have a lot of options to learn about the food of the region. And we're going to be taking a look with Carrie about culinary tours. And she is president, by the way, of Bon Voyage World Travel Experts with offices in Waterford and Union Grove. And just to let you know, Carrie helped myself and four of us to get our passage to Scotland. That's coming up in September, and she did a bang-up job with that. Carrie, thank you for joining in today.
Hello, Larry. Nice to be here again. Nice to chat with you.
Yeah, it's great to chat with you. And if you'd like to talk to Carrie, you can join in, too. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So the title of the book that we just talked with the author about, the subtitle is A Culinary Tour with More Than 280 Traditional Recipes. Well, that's the book. What's a culinary tour in your mind?
Gosh, there's so many different ways to explore food while you're traveling, especially internationally. There's some excellent tours that have become available, and I would love to share more about those with all the listeners today.
Yeah. How is it different from, I mean, there are cooking vacations, but a culinary tour is a little, or would you define that differently?
So there's a lot of different ways in which you can explore local cuisine in an area. I mean, things like you could do a tour where you're dining in someone's local home and being a part of local culture. You can do things like tours. So maybe you arrive and you've got a couple of days in a specific city, not just in the UK, but around the world, where you could spend some time incorporating maybe a bike with a food tour, or an afternoon walking tour with maybe some afternoon tea and some tasty treats, a variety of ways.
How do you find a good tour?
How do you find a good tour? Personally, I like to work with small group tours or something that's private. Sometimes it is nice that when you're doing, you know, a tour that surrounds food to have some other camaraderie. So I love small groups because you can travel easily from place to place and you get to, you know, talk and chat with some of the other participants in the tour.
Do culinary tours, do they tend to be more expensive because of the food involved?
Not necessarily. I mean, depending on where you go, if we were to use London as an example, just because many travelers are interested in London, it's on their bucket list, you can do a local flavoring from, you know, $99 all the way up to something that maybe would be more private, where it might be a little bit more expensive than that. But there's a lot of different price opportunities in both, you know, a European market as well as if you're traveling in the United States to the south or something.
Yeah. Duane in Westfield has a comment for us, I believe. Duane, hi.
Hi, how you doing? My family's from England. My sister's still living there. But if you really want to go on any tours that were really good for culinary stuff, or between bakery or anything else, I would suggest going south, or the south of the country, like in Cork and a few other places around there. There's several people that are from the actual Great British Baking Show that live over there that actually have their own bakeries and stuff and do show up there. So it'd be kind of a nice little treat for them to actually go down there and learn how to do some of that stuff on their own.
Yeah. Duane, thanks a lot for calling. Comment, Carrie.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. I think the difference is you can either rent a car or do local transportation to get to a destination such as what he's speaking of. Or what's nice about some of these tours is you're meeting up with others that maybe it includes transportation or a guide where they're taking you from point A to point B where you don't necessarily have to navigate that.
Did you? I'm just wondering from your perspective, and I'm sure you've arranged a number of culinary tours. Did the Great British Baking Show, has that had an impact, perhaps, as you know, Duane is referring to here?
Absolutely. I think all of these baking shows and cooking shows that have come to, kind of be ways of us entertaining have definitely brought, and I've seen an increase in food tasting or cooking demonstrations as a result of that. So absolutely.
Interesting. Duane, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. So the locations of these tours, you did mention that you can do some private things. Are they mostly restaurants where they occur?
Not necessarily. I mean, they might be on a riverboat as you're sailing a canal or a river in Amsterdam, as an example. So there's a variety of ways you can do them. Like I said, you can sometimes, do one that maybe has activity involved with it. You know, certainly when you're doing a food tour, you tend to be eating a few calories. So it's nice to do maybe even a biking one where you're biking between the different destinations.
Yeah, I like that idea. What are your thoughts on adding a culinary tour to maybe an already planned vacation?
I think it's a great idea. It's an excellent way to experience local flavor, and you can do it in as little as 2-2.5 hours, so it doesn't have to take up an entire day if your schedule doesn't allow for it. And the other interesting thing about a lot of these tours now is they're really catering to certain allergies. So it used to be I happen to be gluten-free, and it used to be that when, years ago I could go on a tour, but maybe I couldn't, dine and eat everything that everybody else was, and now that's really changing. So there's a lot of allergy-safe culinary experiences that are now out there.
Oh, so you can just pick one for the allergy that you might have.
Exactly.
To avoid it. Oh, my gosh. Well, I wanted to mention drink tours. I'll be in Scotland, for example, where I'm imagining there are some tours of Scotch whiskey. But what about, just in general, what about drink tours? How do they work?
Well, in this area that we're talking about today in the UK, certainly in Northern Ireland and Scotland, pubs are really, really popular. So everybody likes to just enjoy the camaraderie that comes with a pub with some live music. And so the small pub tours are certainly a great way to experience, again, local culture, maybe taste the local beers in the market. So certainly I would definitely suggest doing one.
And English food, do the tours of the UK usually feature regional? I mean, the book that we were talking about was Regional Cooking in England. Are the regional foods usually what's featured?
Sometimes, keeping in mind that, big cities such as that have different boroughs or areas, so there might be a Indian, area that you could go to, or like a little Italy you could go to. So not only do some feature the local cuisine for sure and local flavor, but also, different culinary types of food within that area in a smaller, town or city, so to speak, or section of the big city.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some of the more popular food tours in Britain?
It's funny being in Wisconsin here. I know in London they have a cheese crawl, and I think, that's just unique to go to London and have a cheese crawl because we're so fond of our cheese here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I like that, and there are some pretty good cheeses over there, too.
You mentioned earlier, fish and chips and the popularity of that. I know that one of the tours is a Westminster Abbey tour where you view the changing of the guards, and that it's incorporated in also with a food tour where you could taste some fish. And that, again, even a full day, you're looking at maybe 7 hours. Maybe it includes some lunch, some walking, maybe even a dinner, depending on the tour.
Yeah, it's. Do you have a favorite kind of food tour in the UK?
Boy, that's a tough question. you know, I tend to gravitate towards some fun desserts sometimes, you know, things that we don't necessarily get locally at home. So a authentic British food tour that would incorporate some sort of dessert is always fun.
Okay. Carrie Mulliken, our guest today, president of Bon Voyage World Travel Experts, offices in Waterford and Union Grove. And we're talking about culinary tours. You may have a question. And I, you know, you if you want to stray away from the UK, I know Carrie can help with that too, as we talk tours. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. We will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Carrie. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. One way to get to know the food of another country is to take a culinary tour. And on the show today, we've been talking with an expert about what you need to know before you go. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on WPR. Back with us, Carrie Mulliken is president of Bon Voyage World Travel Experts with offices in Waterford and Union Grove. So as we talk with her about tours, or travel in general, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, we got an email from Trista to ask if you are familiar with James Herriot's Yorkshire. And could you talk about that destination?
Boy, I don't know a lot personally about that. Certainly, you know, the world's a big place, and it's hard for us to personally experience every corner of the world. But certainly, we can do the research, and we can talk with other members of our team that perhaps have been there. If she wanted to reach out to me directly, I would be happy to comment and help answer her questions.
Janice emailed us. She's looking for a different kind of a tour of Australia. And the details mention a what is called a trip kitty, and a trip kitty may be applicable. What is this, and why is it added to the price of the tour later, making it hard to figure the total cost of a trip?
That's certainly disturbing, and I can understand where her concern would be. Not knowing that specific tour, it would be tough to comment in terms of what exactly that is. But again, if she wanted to reach out, I could try to explore that with her. Perhaps it's something where, you know, when they're in a particular city or town, that they have the ability to use those funds towards a meal or something would maybe make some sense. Or maybe it's a, you know, package or something that's mailed to her prior to her departure that makes some of the travel experience a little bit more pleasurable, with maybe a you know, eye mask or something like that for the plane, are only the two things that would come to mind at the moment.
Yeah. She wonders, also relating to a trip to Australia, is $1,000 more for a premium economy seat over an economy worth the extra money? People have said that when the seat in front of you reclines, you lose a lot of your space. So apparently there was a $1,000 more for a premium economy seat over an economy seat.
So certainly it's important to always stay, you know, within a budget so that the experience is pleasurable not only during the trip but also when you get the credit card bill at the end of the trip. However, each aircraft is designed differently. Some have what they call a premium economy, which is just like an economy plus that's still in the economy class, but gives you maybe 4 to 6 inches more legroom. And then some aircraft or airlines have a true premium section. If you're upgrading from economy coach to premium, premium and going to Australia round trip for $1,000, I would definitely take that offer if it was me personally.
Okay. What advice do you have for traveling to the UK? Maybe money would be one. What should you know about money in the UK?
Sure. I think, you know, certainly money is important. You want to make sure that you have that currency or the ability to get the currency when you're there. But I think more importantly, what I'd like to just share in case, you know, listeners are not aware, is if you are looking at going to many countries in 2025 outside of the United States, you know, that e-visa is going to go into effect the mid part of 2025. So, again, nothing to be intimidated about. But if it, you're kind of a DIY, you know, make your own plans, it might not be something that everyone is aware of and should definitely look into.
What is it again? I missed that.
Sure. So it would be the electronic visa for the European Union. So a lot of countries, if you're leaving the United States in mid-2025, you'll be required to obtain an e-visa.
E-visas. Okay.
Which is not something, you know, typically we think of certain countries where you have to go through the visa process, like China or something, and, you know, it's quite a lengthy process. This isn't going to be quite that, but it is something that's going to be required.
And that's for 2025.
Correct. Mid-2025, we expect it to roll out. I think they're still defining a few details about it. We expect it to be about €7 or so per person, and it will be an online link that you will want to register for, again, probably 48 to 72 hours prior. As we get close to the launch date, I'm sure some of that will be defined a little bit more, but it is something to keep at front of mind.
So you don't have to, you already have, let's say you have your visa, which you'd need anyway, I would think. But you need this, it's probably whatever airline you're going to be on or working with a travel agent, they're going to be up on this.
Absolutely. The passport is what you need to have to get into the country for sure, to leave the United States. So that would be your passport book. But the e-visa will be in addition to the passport book.
Okay. And that needs to be done. I think I had to do something extra last year when I went to Canada as well. And I can't remember if they called it. It wasn't an e-visa, but something that I needed to have. And I can't remember what it was, but I had to do it. I had to work through the Canada in order to get qualified to and have that ready online in my phone when we went there.
There's a lot of countries that require some sort of entry document, so that's important to really do your research or work with a trusted travel advisor. I think we've, you know, referenced that in the past, so that, because often on the airline's website they may or may not tell you about it, or maybe it's in small print and you don't necessarily know what it is or read it. So it is important, especially when going outside of the United States, to really either do your research or work with someone that can do that for you.
Do you book travels, tours and so forth at all times of the year in UK? What's the best time to visit probably?
Absolutely, we do. And the best time really kind of depends on your personal preference. You know, weather often plays a factor, but these days, especially after COVID, crowds play a factor. So at a time when we used to see a lot of travel happening in our summer months because of weather there, really, you know, we see some of that kind of shadow off a little bit to the shoulder season for those that want to avoid, you know, the massive amounts of crowds in different destinations.
And so maybe even for health and for price, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a beautiful time to travel. I just returned in March with a very large group in Ireland. We went to Dublin to see the St. Patrick's Day parade, which was quite the experience. And we had wonderful weather. I mean, there was a day or two that might have sprinkled a little bit, but overall, no coats we were wearing on St. Patrick's Day and really was able to enjoy. And that would have been, you know, in March.
So some countries now have a fee when entering them. What the heck's that about?
So the airline tickets often will include all your taxes and fees, but there are exceptions to that. So again, it varies all the time. You know, the one thing that's constant about travel is it will always change. So what was current, what you did last year when you went pre-COVID, is likely going to be different when you return to a same destination.
Mm-hmm. And since we've zeroed in a little on Britain today, do they have a fee, by the way?
There's not a fee that I'm aware of that we charge outside of what would be taxes and fees with the airline. But like I said, come mid-25, the e-visa would play a factor in that.
Yeah. The cost of for global entry is increasing. First, maybe explain what global entry is.
Sure. So global entry is good. People often get confused between the different options out there today. So there's CLEAR, there's TSA PreCheck, and there's global entry. If you like the idea of, you know, getting a TSA pre-clearance and you travel internationally, my recommendation is to just, in the beginning, go ahead and do the global entry. You might want to check with your credit card company because often certain credit cards will give you a stipend that you can put towards a TSA PreCheck or global entry. And what global entry does is help clear you. So you're back in the, you know, years ago, you'd sit down, you'd fill out that form that they would pass out to you on the plane, the immigrations form, and you would take that when you come into the United States and go through immigrations and customs. This is an electronic version of this. And I do travel internationally quite a bit myself, and typically I can get from off the plane, and the longest part of Chicago O'Hare is the walk from the plane to that checkpoint. But literally, I can get through that checkpoint with global entry in a matter of minutes.
Oh. So what if you already have the TSA PreCheck, which I have, but I don't have the global entry. Is there a difficulty getting the global entry, or does that make it easier because you already have the TSA?
It probably makes the process a little easier. You know, years ago when it first came out, rolled out, you had to go meet in person, and there were only specific offices. Now they've rolled that out to major airports. So if you do the paperwork online, you can usually get your in-person interview at a major airport. Maybe you're flying and you're connecting through Dallas or Miami or something of that nature, and you're able to do the in-person appointment at that time. But really, TSA, the things to know about that is not every airline accepts TSA, first of all. But ideally, the TSA PreCheck is going to allow you to get through that special line at the airport when you're getting ready to depart on your trip in the United States, so where you're not having to remove your shoes or your, you know, maybe your laptop from your computer case or your jacket, and it's a much simpler process. Global entry doesn't help you in that scenario. Global entry is really for returning back to the United States.
Uh-huh. And the cost of that, it's going up.
Yeah, I don't recall the current cost on it because we typically provide the link and then everybody just submits. And I did mine probably 3 years ago. I believe they're valid for about 6 years.
Yeah, I think they're around $120, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds correct.
That sounds about right. When you plan a vacation for a client, how do you determine what should be on their itinerary?
We really do a great, conversation about what's important to them, because what matters most, you know, often people think, well, I want to go on a vacation, I want to spend this amount of money, and they go into a vacation based on the dollar. What I try to focus on is, when you come back from this vacation, is it going to be everything that you wanted? And that includes a budget. So we really do an excellent job of just having a great conversation. What's important to you? What did you like before? What amenities are of interest? Do you want to be within walking distance? We would maybe establish that they're a foodie. You know, what better way to go and incorporate sightseeing where maybe you're kind of going off the beaten track instead of a major road? You're going, you know, off that road to, you know, iconic pubs that would be easy to miss if you weren't with someone. And then feeling like a local in another country and being able to say, hey, I was a foodie in the UK. How fun is that?
It sounds like a lot of fun to me. Oh, my goodness. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And just joining us now is Patrick from Stoughton. Patrick, what is on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that if you do global entry, it includes TSA pre.
Yes. So
absolutely. So that's why I mentioned earlier, if you are planning to travel internationally, don't just start with the TSA PreCheck. Get the global entry so that it includes that as well. Excellent point, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it. And you can join in too, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. I'm thinking about vacationers. Do vacationers tend to overbook their trip with too much to do and see?
Certainly. Absolutely. We have that conversation often where you just want to be able to have a little bit of downtime to immerse in the area. You know, maybe go for a walk in a park or take in a picnic lunch at a park and just really just experience your surroundings and immerse yourself. So definitely something that we talk about when planning a trip.
Yeah, I was thinking about my trip to Scotland. You know, there's a lot of golf involved, but we did schedule kind of a day right in the middle of the trip, at least one day, maybe there were two. Right in the middle, after a couple of days in a row of golf, we got a day off.
You'll be pleased with that decision, I think. Absolutely.
Yeah, and we'll be able to do a little, actually we'll be moving to different areas to play golf. So along the way that day, we can take a nice leisurely drive, take up the day, stop at various points, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, to be perfectly honest. But to have that day in the middle, you're walking, you know, a long way and pushing a bag around, 40-pound bag around for 4 or 5 hours. It's nice to have a little break in the day, at least. At my age, I might have been able to do.
Anyone.
for sure, because you're losing, that first day there. Our first day there, by the way, is more or less a rest day once we get there. But just stay awake, and we've got some activities and things to do to sort of get warmed up and into the action. Are tours, you know, let's say you're going to a country for the first time. Are tours a better idea or a good idea when traveling for the first time?
I think they are. And, you know, there's different options for different, personalities and things that you're interested in. One option that tends to be fairly low cost that, you know, tourists can start with would be like a hop-on, hop-off type tour where you have, you know, maybe 8 or 10 stops and there's a map with different activities or tourist spots within that area, and you go to that destination, hop off the bus, there's narration as you go, and you see the things that are at that stop, you get back on the bus, you go to the next. But what's nice about that is you can do it on your timeline, where when you're with a formal tour, it might be that, you know, here we're going to stop, but you're only going to have 90 minutes to walk around or 15 minutes to explore. So there's a couple different ways in which someone can tour, and that's something, again, that we would do an evaluation process. But yes, I do recommend that because it gives you your bearings, and then it allows you to be a little bit more comfortable when you're exploring those following days.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because there would be people that say, okay, I have 90 minutes is going to be good enough for me. But others might say, you know, at a particular spot, but others might say, oh, I want to spend more time.
What's nice about that, too, is, as you mentioned earlier, you know, when you're traveling to the UK, typically from the United States, Wisconsin area, you're going to travel throughout the night and you're going to arrive the next morning or, you know, early afternoon. And you want to be able to try to get used to that difference in time zone. So to do a tour like a hop-on, hop-off gives you flexibility to do it at any time. There's not a hard start time. So it allows you to just see the sights, relax a little bit, have something to eat, but not to be able to spend that afternoon so that you can get a good night's rest and then wake up refreshed and ready to go start exploring for the rest of your trip.
Yeah, I was glad you found a direct flight for us. So you get on, there's no changing of planes, and you just go right straight there. That to me
I still
is
recommend
the
that today. The airlines have staffing issues like most businesses do today. So whenever you can try to fly nonstop, I do still recommend that.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that. Well, give me an example of a tour that you've done recently that's turned out really well. I imagine they mostly all turn out well, but
Well, taking 169 people to Ireland for St. Patrick's Day was phenomenal. Everybody had a fabulous, fabulous time and came back, you know, wanting to plan their next adventure. But kind of talking a little bit more about, you know, you had asked a little bit earlier about, you know, like a pub tour or something. So to just give your listeners, you know, kind of an overview of what some of those highlights would be. Again, you would walk to maybe four different pubs. They're being off the beaten track, so ones that you might have missed on your own. Maybe enjoy a bite to eat and the drink of that area or something that they're known for. That might even include, you know, a fun little afternoon of playing a game in an Irish pub or an English pub, excuse me. And then, like I said, talking with others, maybe listening to some live music. And something like that would run about $88 per person and would be about 3.5 hours. So again, not super expensive, doesn't require a lot of time, but be able to see and do and feel like a local.
Yeah, that's do you ever give suggestions on dress or attire and that sort of thing as well?
Absolutely. You know, especially when touring into some of the churches or cathedrals, there's certainly dress attire for women with not having bare shoulders, or sometimes it's a foot attire that's required. So it just depends on the tour. And that's what's important. In travel, you don't know what you don't know. So you either have to do a lot of research or you have to work with trusted travel advisors.
Yeah. I can remember going into a restaurant. I had a brand new pair of tennis shoes on. And I was refused service because I was wearing tennis shoes. And I looked at some of the other people that were there, and some of them had some really ratty old sandals that looked awful. And I couldn't figure out why I was being told I couldn't eat because I had nice tennis shoes on while others could have. But that's, you know, that's a custom. I didn't know. I learned from that. And kind of learn the hard way. So it's better, I think, to get that advice ahead of time and know that when you're going somewhere. Well, Carrie,
absolutely. There's so much to know.
Yeah, there's a lot to know. Well, Carrie, I want to thank you again for being with us today. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Where's your next trip?
I'm headed to Mexico to a couple new resorts that have opened up to explore those and see what those are like for our clients. So I'll be off to Mexico in May.
Well, you have a great trip, and thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it very much, Carrie.
You enjoy Scotland.
Okay. Carrie Mulliken, president of Bon Voyage World Travel Experts. Carrie has offices in both Waterford and Union Grove, Wisconsin. It's always fun to talk with her. And probably get her back to do this again. Well, tomorrow on the show, Lisa Johnson's back to talk about attracting pollinators to the garden. I'm looking now to see if we've reached our goal of matching goal. We were close. I think we had about $600 to go to. There's a matching group of donors, generous donors, who have put up $30,000, and you can get your gift matched right now. Double your gift at WPR.org/donate or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Help support Wisconsin Public Radio and World Press Freedom Day. Tomorrow, Lisa Johnson is back for Garden Talk to visit about attracting pollinators to your garden and answering all your garden questions. Thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.